Welcome to the Building PA Podcast, the voice of the construction industry throughout Pennsylvania. Here are your co-hosts, Chris Martin and John O'Brien.
Hello, and welcome to the Building PA Podcast. I am co-host John O'Brien from the Keystone Contractors Association, coming to you from central Pennsylvania. It's a rainy day. It's a down day. Rumor is it's... Yeah, boo. It's, I don't know. I don't know what the rumors are anymore with weather. So who knows? Who cares? Joined as always by fellow co-host Chris Martin. Chris, give us a check-in, brother.
Hey, man. Checking in here, John. And you're right. It's a rainy, damp, ruddy day here in Pittsburgh. And coming at you from the Swickley office of Atlas Marketing. And we tell stories for companies who build things. And we are talking on the Building PA Podcast today, mental health. Right, John?
Yes. Mental health and wellness in the workplace.
Yeah. Very, very important, timely topic, and one that I know not only at the KCA, but Atlas Marketing is supporting it as well. And the Building PA Podcast, we're talking about it. And John, instead of you and I talking about it, who do we have? Who's joining us today?
We're going to silence down here soon, but we do have a good expert here. Yes. National, international, probably, I'm guessing.
He might
pop up into Canada, so we can say international.
That's true.
Cal Byer, Vice President, Workforce Risk and Worker Wellbeing with Holmes Murphy. Cal, how are we doing today?
Excellent. Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to spend time with you, and thanks for the great greeting.
You bet. International's okay with you?
Yeah, the Canada part really helped.
Okay, good. Okay.
Cross over a lot into to Canada, so thank you. You're very creative.
You bet. I figured you're right there, Chicago. You might travel north a little bit. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So beyond your trips to Canada and your training, and who is Cal? Let's hear a little background on yourself.
Yeah, I think just an ordinary guy with a big heart. Honestly, it's a blessing to do this work every day. It's been hard work. I'm fundamentally a risk management and safety professional. I worked in healthcare through high school and college. Decided for my own mental health and well-being not to pursue a career in that. I found as the lowest guy in the totem pole, I was a person who never left the hospital. There was always something more I could do. I was an excessive volunteer. I had a caregiver spirit, but I always had the emotional response when bad things happened of how do I comfort people? And it turned out to be a blessing and a curse. And I did make a commitment, no matter what job I ultimately do, I'm going to have a focus on saving lives. I learned from healthcare. I'm not sure. Do you guys need the lights or no?
No.
Yeah, let's keep it on. Let's keep it on because we're recording for the video.
Okay. Looks like I have to move a little bit more, which normally isn't an issue. I'm in one of our outer offices today. I'll start again. What I learned in healthcare, there was a need to move upstream, to focus more on prevention. I was seeing people deal with the aftermath of workplace accidents, accidents on a farm, incidents in the home. And I kept feeling like it's not an accident. I became a safety and risk management professional. But what I've always tried to do is focus on the human capital risk management and the business case, the financial risk management will follow. And that's a little bit of who I am. Father of five children, that helped me understand risk communication and teaching people to make informed decisions and to understand consequences. And my wife and I live right now in a suburb of Seattle. I moved there almost 10 years ago to work for a hot mix asphalt producer and paving contractor that back in 2014 allowed me to build mental health and suicide prevention into our safety and risk culture. I've been trying to do that for 10 years, guys. And within 2 months of being there, three labor unions allowed me to have those conversations. And you've had a prior guest named Mandy Kime. I was a member of the AGC of Washington with that organization. And Mandy said to me, well, you're a member, so I have to do what you want me to do. I go, well, do you want to hear what I'm asking you? She's like, well, I probably should. I go, it's workplace mental health and suicide prevention. And Mandy was a very open guest on your podcast. She shared with me. I'm a mother of multiple, meaning multiple births. She has triplets and another child. I'm part of a high-risk population. So how can I help you? And really, she started collaborating pretty quickly. And as they say, the rest is history. I think we morphed an initiative into a movement nationally. Yeah. And really proud to have had a part in that.
It's a movement that I got wind of. 2018 or 2019, I got an email from CPWR, and I saw you were the guest speaker talking about suicide in the industry. And I'm like, oh, I want to check this out, you know, and it was inspirational to me and really helped me in our activities. So thank you.
Well, John, thank you. And I think what's hard for people, there was no data until July of 2016, but the work had begun post 9/11 and definitely post Hurricane Katrina. when you see the mass impact of those events and disasters, the ripple effect takes time. But we started hearing concerns about families, about workers, about leaders and managers. And the stories were coming in sad, and we just kept feeling we needed to do more. So that topic around critical incident response to address the emotional needs of people after bad events was something I'd been teaching through the Construction Financial Management Association. And for about a decade, little over, did programs on emergency preparedness, disaster response, and it kept morphing. About every 15 to 18 months, we'd add another module. So emergency preparedness, disaster response, business continuity, crisis management, critical incident response. There ultimately was even a module on cyber liability because people wanted to hear, what do you do when something bad happens? What are the best practices? But what grew out of that was a passion for taking care of people, these ideas of caring cultures. And there were so many examples after doing those workshops. If something bad happened, companies rallying around other companies. There was a flood in Nashville, and a Nashville chapter member wrote to CFMA and said, thanks to the class that Cal and one of his counterparts, Brian Cooney, a dear friend of mine, had done, we were well prepared. But they started fundraising to help people who were not as well prepared. We saw the human side kick in. People wanting to do a good thing. We just couldn't get this to a tipping point. The stigma around mental health was so strong. And ultimately, that's when I said, I'm going to have to go work for a construction company, not just be a consultant to construction, but go run a program, show people how to weave this in to safety, health, and wellness, how to weave it into HR and employee benefits. And just so excited to see the progress that our industry makes. Yeah. People have really responded well.
Cal, everything that I've talked about so far in just this short time, it's all about personal relationship, a personal impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Mandy Kine being on our show in the past, and she's wonderful. I've heard her speak a couple times. And, you know, you like you mentioned, she's a mother of multiple births and those type of things. You're a father of five. I know I'm a father of two. John's a father of three. You know, the personal component of this really drives people, as you said, be that human. So can you talk a little bit about how contractors can make that more of a prevalent element in their HR component, in their safety component, even in their communications component?
Yeah, weaving this in as a personal communication strategy, taking personal responsibility. One of the best strategies, Chris, is to teach employees how to communicate to their families. And I would say in the early days, this may not be for you, but this could be for your family. It could be for an extended family. It could be for a neighbor, a classmate, a friend. And it took the pressure off someone feeling like, wow, we're talking about my mental health. Instead, it was equipping them to share information about an employee assistance program or a crisis hotline, like the crisis text line. Make sure your children have this information. You always want people to know that help is available. And I found that that resonated so well. It was a personal touch. I started using wallet cards in the workplace in about 2011. I wish I'd been smart enough to print those 10 years earlier. It would have saved us 5 or 6 years on the implementation of this movement. But sharing wallet cards was equipping people to have those conversations at home. And even if they didn't feel comfortable explaining all the details, hey, I got this at work today. I want to share it with you. Or put this number in your telephone in case you can't get a hold of me or mom. We want you to know that help is always available. That has been such a powerful tool. The company I worked for, we had 700 employees. At one point, we had printed 21,000 of these wallet cards. And then some labor unions, specifically the laborers in the Northeast, they printed probably 75,000, three batches of 25,000. They made it a team building exercise. They sent me photos as they were doing it. And
That's great.
Stuffing these wallet cards and hard hat stickers into a little coin envelope. We called them pocket packets because it fit in a vest or in the back pocket of jeans. And the first 3, 4, 5 times we distributed these at job sites, if it was a vertical building, I would always walk every floor to see if they were being thrown in the stairwells or if they were in garbage cans. We never found one. And then the safety directors were telling us, like, amazing. I got stopped 6 or 7 times today by people who received one of those pocket packets. You know, this is the most important topic we're going to talk about. So that personal touch, Chris, you nailed it. That's the magic, the power of one person.
And Cal, I agree with everything you just said too, from the standpoint of, you know, people that I speak to in the industry are recognizing that it's not enough to just go and take a pill or drink your worries away. And it's the stigma, as you mentioned earlier, is definitely being knocked down. And people are much more open and much more willing to have that conversation now. And I think a lot of that is, I mean, I'm no expert like you are, but I would assume after the COVID pandemic, it really opened everybody's eyes. And, you know, what have you seen as a result of that? And even one step further, what are some tips and tricks that you're sharing, just like that pocket pack, which mm-hmm. I love. I love that idea. I think we're going to steal it for something. But can you talk a little bit more about that, too?
Yeah. You know, there's no one magic pill. There's no silver bullet. This takes a variety of topics to reach different people. I wish we had more multilingual materials. We do have more Spanish materials than before, but that still is the biggest gap. But people sharing simple toolbox talks, more organizations are leaning in with local mental health organizations and nonprofits, seeing more QPR training, question, persuade, refer, or the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has a program called Talk Saves Lives. So we're seeing this organically grow. The number of associations and labor unions that are building this into their annual conferences and conventions. It took a long time to get that at the keynote. It was always at the breakout level, but now we're seeing this bold, we can do this. We're not going to have backlash. We can be out in the forefront. There's so many examples, podcasts, the number of organizations during the pandemic that did webcasts or webinars on these topics. Newsletters, the articles that are being written and shared. I've already had requests from a couple of organizations I need to pass on to the last article I'd written for you. People are like, those were such practical tips and pointers and useful information. So we've broken down the wall of stigma. We still have a long way to go on topics like substance misuse, overdose, addiction, treatment, and recovery. But I feel like we're really in the right headway. Making progress.
Agreed. I'm glad you mentioned the QPR. We just booked this week. We booked two QPR trainings with the local healthcare system. And we're excited about that. You know, it's capped at 30, and I think we're getting pretty close within the first week. So we're jazzed about that, really excited. But also, as far as the human touch goes, so back in 2017, KCA started the Construction Opioid Awareness Week. And the first step we took was we partnered with experts, you know, so we went right to the National Safety Council and they said, here's a good idea. Here's an opioid warn me card or sticker. You put it on your health insurance card. And instead of just mailing it out, you know, we spelled out detailed steps. Like we would like the executive or the safety director, or someone to personally give this to someone for that human touch. You know, it's a way to create that family atmosphere with the company and a way to let people know they care about them and stuff. And we got positive reviews about that. That was a good first step in our journey on the opioid attack. But as Chris kind of asked about COVID, I was wondering, when it comes to human touch, has that evolved at all because of COVID? I know you mentioned virtual events and stuff, but are there other techniques or advice as a coming off of COVID?
Yeah. You know, our industry, with the declaration of being an essential business, I think helped keep us more together. Sadly, across the country, some of the live events haven't been as well attended as in the past. We're starting to see some rebound effect. Obviously, work has changed. Many people are looking for more flexible hours, more hybrid work, work from home. Those would be people that we're concerned about. How do you build a culture and a caring culture if people aren't all in that same workplace? So without making it political, I think companies can communicate to employees wherever they're at, that help is available. Mm-hmm. Resources are being shared. Find opportunities to weave this in. One example was pulse surveys. We found bigger companies were doing pulse surveys to check in with employees. How are you doing? How's your stress? People were using that as a tool to check in on workload, on overtime, on managing expectations, on balancing the boundaries between work and home responsibilities. I think that was really a useful tool. I wish it had been used more broadly. I wish we had more technology savvy to drive those types of strategies. Mm-hmm. A lot of those were one-off decisions, but I'll tell you, things that we see some of the associations doing, building it into safety assessments, building in public safety type announcement videos, posting more resources on their website, small associations to large associations. And I do want to give you a shout out. What KCA did with the opioids, you were one of the leaders. We pinpointed that last year in the first national summit, mental health and suicide prevention. The National Association of Home Builders and then you were the two associations driving that process, that awareness.
And we actually talked to them. So we kind of were sharing notes back 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, definitely you two were the early adopters. And it turned out you were really, really right how prevalent that issue is.
And John's been a leader in that and continues. John, I'm gonna tout your horn for you, okay? continues to lead that charge. It's not like it's just, okay, we did this 6 years ago and we're going to do the same thing. It keeps improving and getting better on that. And I applaud you for that too. You know, Cal, you also mentioned something there that I thought was really important, which is that collaboration component and how important that is to just check in with your teammate, with your crew, with your colleagues, with whatever you want to call it, and having the opportunity, even if it's over a Zoom call or a Teams meeting like we're on right now, and just asking the question, how's everybody doing? I think is helping in crashing that stigma. You know, I think that's really important. So,
Chris, the contractor I was working for, we had interactive safety meetings. And one of those interactive safety meetings, probably back in 2015 into 16, was role playing on a scenario, are you okay? And it was teaching them how to refer a family member to the EAP or to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline or to Crisis Text Line. It's when we were rolling out the wallet cards and the pocket packets in our company. And within a week of doing the role playing that everyone initially grumbled about, people were saying, you know what, that was a good safety meeting. It was helpful. It was useful. We started hearing stories of, I talked to my wife, I talked to my child, they're getting help now. But what we saw within a week was employees helping other employees. Within a month, family members were helping other families. It was powerful because people were like, wow, this is the ripple effect that we were hoping to see. We thought it could take a year. Those were powerful stories. And through the role playing, people started sharing stories. Then people started saying, I'm happy if you ever need me to share my story, I'm willing to do that. So out of that experience, I developed this concept of 3 V's of leadership. You know, we need leaders to be visible supporters. We need them to be vocal about mental health. It's okay to not be okay. Help is available. But if we could get them to be vulnerable, that was the secret sauce, that vulnerability. So for a leader, owner, manager, supervisor to let people know, hey, this is really important. My family uses mental health services. We call the EAP. Here's what it did for our family. It took away the risk of a person asking for help. It normalized that conversation. And so what happened after we saw those 3 V's, a 4th V emerged. It became vertical up and down the org chart. People got comfortable sharing those stories. We started having people give lived experience testimonials about addiction, thanking their coworkers for having their back when they went to treatment. It was mind-blowing. And for a while, I was a little nervous. How are we going to get the tiger back in the cage or the genie back in the bottle, seeing how magical it was? And yet, oh my goodness, we've just had personal stories of people taking medication, of people going for therapy, people getting help for family members. What we saw was the human response. It created empathy. People leaned in. People started sharing. On those pocket packets, I'll give you a couple quick examples. We had a person who'd lost a number of people in a battalion. They'd served in Iraq. They were doing a reunion. He asked for more pocket packets. And for many years, they'd never lost another teammate. They took personal accountability to check in with people. I remember a gentleman who was one of the most bashful workers in this entire process. He's going to a high school reunion, 40 years. They've already lost 6 classmates to suicide. Can I get more of those pocket packets? I'm going to a class reunion. I want to let people know that help is available. We had several school age, like leaders with school age kids. Kid had a suicide at their school. Can we take some of these to give to the principal? So she has something to give to the teachers. People started showing that empathy, that compassion, then the action. It was powerful. And I had a worker say, we should call it compaction, compassion in action.
And I like that.
That is good.
We should do that on a t-shirt, you know? And yeah. I was like, well, not sure everyone's going to get it if they're not doing what we're doing. But that showed like how normalized it became, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that when somebody starts coming to you with other taglines or ideas, they get it. And then now they get it to other people. So you have succeeded in many, many ways. So congratulations, Cal.
It was the workers. And people sometimes will think, here comes the outside risk manager. How did you first start talking about mental health? I didn't. The first thing I did was take 100 days, that old proverbial 100-day tour around the company. I wanted to get to every one of our operations 4 or 5 times in that 100 days and then come up with a list of, hey, here's what I heard. This is what I saw. The only actions I took were something if it was ever immediately dangerous to life or health. Otherwise, I would just come back, give feedback to the existing safety team that I was going to be leading. And the first thing we noticed was hearing protection. I think we can do better on getting voluntary compliance with hearing protection. Let's teach people about the risk of hearing loss in our industry. That tied then to heat-related illness. And then we tied in a warm-up exercise program. You know, the aches and pains, the musculoskeletal injuries. It allowed me to talk about opioids before we talked about mental health. Why are you so concerned about all these strains and sprains? It's normal. It's what we do in construction. It doesn't need to be normal. Yeah, our bodies are limited. We're not machines. We're humans. I want to get you to retirement in better shape than what you would have. And people started buying in on the hearing protection. Within about 6 weeks, people were sending photos of them with their children on ATVs wearing hearing protection, firearms range. People sending, hey, I like the samples you got me. Oh, those worked well. You're right. I could wear them and I could still hear the birds rustling. Mm-hmm. It showed that we were winning the hearts of employees. And if you win their hearts, you'll win their minds. Nice. And so many of those examples, when we did the warm-up exercise program and we talked about the risk of opioids and self-medication, the risk of sleep deprivation from chronic pain leading to fatigue, causing that presenteeism, which could distract, people started to realize it's real. And then I had a worker say one day, well, when we were playing checkers, Cal was playing chess. This mental health thing you were doing the whole time you got here. But I couldn't outrun the supply line as someone who came in from the outside.
Yeah,
I had to build it in to our occupational health and safety.
Nice. And it sounds like you've done that.
Yeah.
Well, it was hard to leave that organization. But I had the opportunity to work with an insurance broker. And my vision was if I could embed this more into employee benefits, could impact 100,000 lives per year. And then one day, a national labor union invited me to speak to their 26 health executives, like the executive secretary treasurers. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, they have 500,000 members and another 1.5 million dependents. We need to set bigger goals. We can impact our industry in a really powerful way through that collaboration, Chris, you mentioned.
Awesome. What a reach. What a story. This is awesome. I love this talk.
It's powerful.
It is. Yeah. It is. I like the V's too, the visible, vertical, vulnerable, vertical. So the vulnerable, I think we're getting better. People are opening up more. I don't think we're all the way there yet. You still have any advice there? It's just the more it happens, I think it's more people talking type of deal or any other pieces of advice?
Yeah, I encourage people, leaders at every level, share this information with your loved ones. If you take a personal commitment in it, then it's going to be easier to talk about it at the workplace because your children are going to thank you. Your spouse is going to thank you. It's amazing when you have those conversations at home, how common this issue is. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I was in Orlando. I did 3 presentations on opioid first dose prevention strategies. Mm-hmm. I built in interactive polling to get some real-time feedback. And so I asked a question pretty early on. It's a group that I've done previously, so I knew I had their support. How many of your organizations or unions have experienced the loss of an employee or a family member to an opioid overdose? It was split almost equally between, in thirds, between yes, no, and unsure. I wanted the unsure because I didn't want people to feel guilty, because as they go back and talk about this, as they do toolbox talks or do a stand down or share those National Safety Council warn stickers, I don't want people to feel guilty. Like, wow, we had a family member lost a child and we didn't even know. We didn't do anything. So I was giving them permission. You can't control the past. We can only control going forward. So let's make a commitment. No one left behind. The next question I asked, have you lost a family member, a friend, a classmate, a neighbor, or someone else you care about? 70% of those 300 respondents said yes. The unsure was less than 2%. And what that shows, it's when it's personal, there's no in between, right? It's yes or no. Mm-hmm. 70% yes. The emotional response in that room, people were ready to learn first dose prevention strategies. And it's been a consistent finding when we ask those questions. It does make people more vulnerable because they're looking for solutions. You're giving them hope. And when they embrace it, they become more vulnerable because they want to share it.
Excellent. Cal, I have to say thank you. Not that we want to take up your day, because I know you're really busy, but thank you so much. And I think that was such a powerful story to leave on.
It's just nice to be with you today. And if I can ever help, don't hesitate and keep doing the great work you're doing. Thanks for your leadership and thanks for your support. And we're in this together, right? And the only way this happens is through that collaboration.
Thank you for joining the Building PA Podcast. To stay up to date, follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook, and visit buildingpapodcast.com to subscribe to upcoming shows. Thanks for listening.